that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. The 1930s and 40s world of murder, disaster, and violent accidents. That was the world of the famous or infamous tabloid photographer known as Ouija. There's an exhibit currently at Chico State's University Art Gallery that showcases photos by Ouija, as well as photos by current photographers who, like Ouija, mix documentary realism with vividly constructed lies. Today we talk with the curators from that gallery about this intriguing exhibit. Russell Burnham is a music professor emeritus from CSU Chico, and he's also a composer. At the university this Sunday afternoon, musicians and singers are performing Burnham's original works, including a new clarinet concerto performed by the composer himself. On today's program, we'll be talking with Burnham about that concert titled With and Without Words. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
This Sunday afternoon at the Trinity Alps Performing Arts Center in Weaverville, see national fiddle champion Tashina Claridge. Join this Trinity County native showing her musical prowess starting at 3. At the Siskiyou Art Museum in Dunsmuir, an exhibit opens tomorrow. It's called Shared Paths, the Art of Joan Pechanic and Michi Takamoto. These artists and longtime friends show a range of works spanning more than 25 years. Takamoto has created paintings based on her childhood in Japanese-American internment camps. Meet the artists at a reception tomorrow night from 5 to 7 o'clock. Tonight, the Reading Civic Center welcomes comedian Ron White. This Texas funny man tells tales that will keep you in stitches. The laughs start at 8 o'clock. The Orland Art Center exhibit, A Marvelous Media Mix, features works by Denise Granger Kerbs. This self-taught artist works in a variety of media, including watercolors, pastels, and her newest medium, alcohol inks. The center's open Tuesday through Saturday, 1 to 6. In Chico tonight at the Downtown Plaza, the final Friday night concert of 2017. The Jeff Pershing Band lays down some original rock tunes to say goodbye to summer, starting at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow at Chico State, it's time once again for the Chico World Music Festival. This day-long celebration brings to 4 stages a diversity of music from around the globe. Also enjoy international food booths and art activities for children and adults. Tomorrow's festival starts at 11:30 and lasts till 6. Tuesday, at Chico State's Laxon Auditorium, the martial artists and acrobats of Tianjin take the stage for a spectacle of aerial stunts, juggling acts, contortion tricks, and feats of balance. This acrobatic troupe leaps into action starting at 7:30. The Janet Turner Print Museum at the University presents Printing Obsessions, Conjuring Curatorial Practice. In this exhibition, advanced printmaking students turn curators select works that highlight the finer points of printmaking. The Turner's open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 4. Tonight, Chico Arts Center opens its exhibit, Small Works. All the paintings in the show are on 12 by 12 inch canvases. See these intriguing pieces and meet some of their creators at the center's reception this evening, which starts just 2 hours from now at 5 o'clock. Theater on the Ridge in Paradise presents Radioland's Fall Fantasia. Patterned after old-time radio variety shows, the production includes singing, dancing, and comedy skits. Performances are tonight and tomorrow at 7:30. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. It's the birthday today of television comedy pioneer Sid Caesar, who noted, "If you have no tragedy, you have no comedy. Crying and laughing are the same emotion. If you laugh too hard, you cry, and vice versa."
There's an intriguing collection of photography now at the University Art Gallery at Chico State. Our visual art expert Dolores is with the curators of that gallery, Kelly Lindner and Jason Tannen.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm going to be talking about two truths and a lie. That's the name of a view exhibition. I'm going to first have the director of the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery on the CSUC campus, Kelly, give a little introduction to the show.
Two Truths and a Lie started off with a conversation with Jason Tannen, who is the former curator for the University Art Gallery and a photographer in his own right. And we were talking about the photographer Ouija, the famed news photographer in New York City in the 1930s and 40s. Most of his photographs were published in the tabloid papers. Two Truths and a Lie features the work of Zoe Crocher, Jessamine Lovell, and Ouija. It's about the interpretation of a photograph and whether something can be both truthful and fiction at the same time. Actually, I'm going to turn this over to Jason so he can talk a little bit about Ouija's work.
Ouija was the archetypal news photographer of the 20th century, and I first became aware of him way back when I was in graduate school. He was a photographer in New York. His beat was New York City at night. His photographs are striking, stark, and very shocking. He photographed almost exclusively at night, with a large press camera. He focused on disasters and calamities. He photographed murders, fires, automobile accidents. And he also photographed sort of the more pleasurable moments of life in the city, both high and low. Opera lovers, moviegoers, barflies, people of the streets. He photographed at night, and he would fire off his flash that had a flashbulb and illuminate whatever he was photographing so that the situation in front of him that he was photographing took on a kind of stage-like aspect. He was photographing real life, but it took on a kind of theatrical or cinematic quality that served to heighten or focus the inherent drama of that incident or action.
Jason, what was the nature of the tabloids he was working for?
Tabloid newspapers, their heyday was really beginning in the 1920s and 30s, going into the 40s. They served the city's immigrant community. A lot of them were semi-literate. And so the tabloids were very much focused and dependent on the image. Photographs, sometimes drawings or charts, so that the reader could glean basically the entire story from pictures without having to read. That's where Ouija was able to thrive. He was a night owl. He photographed at night, and then he would take his camera and the film, rush to a dark room, develop it, make prints, give the prints to whatever tabloid was willing to pay the $3 or $5 charge for the print. It was said the blood or the streaming water from the fire was still drying on the pavement when the morning edition came out.
You were telling me how he got his nickname, Ouija.
That was a reference to his uncanny ability to arrive at the scene of a crime or disaster a lot of times before the police even got there. Supposedly, one time, a cop on the scene asked him if he had a Ouija board, and that's how he got to the scene before anybody else. So Ouija, which is O-U-I-G-A for the Ouija board, he took that phonetically and recast it as Ouija, W-E-E-G-E-E, and that's the name he used for the rest of his career.
You'll be doing a walkthrough, Jason.
Yes, that's right, along with Kelly. A gallery walkthrough taking place on Tuesday, September 19th at 5 p.m. in the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery, talking about all three artists in the exhibition. I'll be able to speak in detail about Ouija's work and some of the backstory about the photographs that are in the show. And also, I think I'll be talking about how we were able to acquire all of these Ouija prints and put the show together.
Jason, a documentary photograph. Is it the truth? Are we to believe Ouija?
Well, the concept of truth and its connection to the photograph is a really interesting one. One of the really interesting things about Ouija was, although he was a news photographer recording the facts, the disaster or incident, and it appeared in daily newspapers, he was not above manipulating or altering what was in front of him for the sake of drama or humor or irony. For example, the photograph of a crumpled body, a murder victim, a gangland slaying, in the foreground is a gun on the pavement. And it's believed Ouija probably shifted the gun so that it made for a more dramatic image. Obviously, back then, there was no such thing as Photoshop, that kind of sophisticated manipulation. But Ouija did sometimes alter the scene in front of him. There's another very famous incident having to do with one of his best-known photographs called The Critic. I'm not going to reveal what happened there. People will have to come to the gallery and see the show, see the text that's next to that photograph to find out what that story is.
Jason, how do you feel Ouija's work is relevant today?
One of the things that Ouija was famous for was he was everywhere recording all of these incidents and disasters. What I thought about was Rodney King. How in modern times, starting really with Rodney King, everyone was in that position.
Potentially always a camera on the cell phone.
The cell phone, the video cam, took the place of Ouija as a kind of a witness and recorder of these events.
I think that Two Truths and a Lie really encapsulates what perhaps we weren't really thinking about when we started this exhibition. Alternative facts, fake news. A body camera on a police officer, what it's recording, it cannot always convict if there has been a crime committed. Right now, a photograph has become as suspect as the news that we see on television.
Kelly, the idea of doing something with Ouija excited you so much that you began developing a grant, but also working in two other contemporary artists.
We feel very fortunate that the National Endowment for the Arts has funded this exhibition. During our conversations, Jason and I began to sort of look outward as to what strategies current artists might be using, similar to what Ouija was doing. I came across two artists, Jessamine Lovell and Zoe Crosher, both using photography in interesting ways, and their work explores surveillance, identity, and how a documentary photograph can possibly be both fiction and true at the same time.
Tell us some specifics about the two artists.
Jessamine Lovell has done a project that is called Dear Erin Hart. In 2011, her identity was stolen, which prompted her to actually develop an entire art project around her search for the woman who had stolen her identity. Erin Hart had assumed Jessamine's identity and was out committing crimes and was finally caught after Jessamine had been called into court to appear for these crimes that she had not committed. The project itself exhibits all of these surveillance photographs that Jessamine took trying to track down who Erin Hart was. She ultimately did find this woman, but she never confronted her. It was more about the surveillance of this person and how she could push the boundaries between the public and the private.
How about the other artist?
Zoe Crusher has done a project about a fictional character named Michelle Dubois. This might sound a little complicated. Michelle Dubois is actually a true person. Zoe Crusher has acquired an archive of self-portraits of this woman from the 1970s and 80s. Michelle Dubois appears in various guises as Mae West, as a nurse, as a stewardess, as a geisha. She traveled the world and took photographs of herself, snapshots that then Zoe Crusher has taken and manipulated digitally and in analog, you know, reprinting them and crumpling them up in some cases. So when she displays them, all you see is the ubiquity of Michelle Dubois. The Jackie Headley University Art Gallery is located in the new Arts and Humanities Building at First Street and Salem. That's the easiest entrance I can tell you to go to. We are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturdays, 12 to 4. The exhibition is going to be on view through September 30th.
Listening here to clarinetist and ex-music professor Russell Burnham. Burnham is also a composer and has created lots of pieces of music. We have a chance to hear lots of those pieces this Sunday at a concert called With and Without Words. Coming right up, we'll be talking with Russell Burnham. My guest, Russell Burnham, is an emeritus professor at Chico State University. How long did you teach in the music department?
38 years.
And have you been composing as well as teaching for many years?
Off and on.
Well, you have quite a few people helping you present this material on Sunday. How many performers are involved in this recital?
I believe there are 9 altogether, counting myself. There's quite a bit of piano. I'm going to play the secondo part on one of the pieces that involve 4 hands, 2 people playing on the same keyboard. That's the Happy Birthday Variations. Meant to be funny, a little bit humorous, because if you take Happy Birthday to You and you try to treat it somewhat seriously, well, that's automatically funny to start with, right? Mm-hmm. I'm playing that piece with Bob Bowman. Bob Bowman is also playing another one of the pieces. He's playing with Brad Martin, a 4-hand part on the big songs that come at the end, in which the piano is just one of the instruments. And there is Cara Herrick, who is playing a song cycle with Don Weiss, the soprano. There's a flutist who's playing 5 pieces for flute and piano. One of the pieces on this program is 17 minutes long. Now, those are 6 different songs, but they're one package.
Is that the package of songs that's based on poems by the local Troy Jollymore?
It is.
What was it like taking poems written by a local poet and turning them into something with music?
Well, it was wonderful because I think he's a really good poet. You have to have something that sings a bit to start with, or you can't work with it musically. The moment I picked up his first book and started looking at these things, I said, wow. Just as inspirational to me as Rilke had been or William Carlos Williams. And it was a person who I could actually talk to. Uh-huh. He was in another building, you know, just across the way over there. It felt really good, actually.
I understand Troy Jolamore himself is going to be at the recital this Sunday.
He has indicated that he will be in. You know, when I go home now, I'm going to call him up and ask him if he might want to say a few words about these poems.
Yeah.
Be better than me saying something about the poems.
It seems like, having looked over the poems, they're very much inspired by nature and animals and roses. Is that inspirational to you to have images in your mind of certain animals and certain plants?
Absolutely. I'd already written a set of songs based on poetry about roses, and I came across a poem about roses by Jolamore. It's called Roses Inverted. As part of that older cycle, I had taken a little piece by McDowell, which is called To a Wild Rose. Doo-dum-bum, boo-dum-bum, ba-da-da-da-da. I had taken his phrase, that first phrase, and the rhythms and the patterns, the pitches, and I had incorporated those into all the songs in that other cycle. What I did with the poem by Jolamore, Roses Inverted, in order to get an idea of where to start and what to do, I turned the tune upside down.
And what does that mean, to turn the tune upside down?
Well, the poem is about roses that are upside down in the ground. They're growing downwards rather than upwards. It's the dark song. It's the dark poem in this cycle. And it talks about what they might be to us. They're white and they're pale and growing underground. And so what I did was I turned the To a Wild Rose upside down. Instead of going, ba-dum-bum, the tune goes, da-dum-bum.
And all of these pieces you wrote, but they're not all new music.
Some of them have been performed once, and then the clarinet concerto is almost completely new.
The clarinet concerto, people will hear on Sunday afternoon, is the newest piece, right?
Yes, it is.
The clarinet has been your instrument for most of your musical life. What is it you like about the clarinet in particular?
I just like the warmth of it vibrating. When it's working right, when you've got everything going, your hands and your fingers vibrate. Your fingers change the pitches, and you can feel the pitches change in the vibrations on the instrument. I love that feeling. You begin to vibrate with something else in the world.
Does that make it feel more personal and more like a part of you?
Absolutely.
So you have 6 live performances of your pieces on Sunday, and there's 2 recorded pieces. Tell me about why you're playing some recorded pieces.
The San Francisco choral artists are an a cappella group, tend to encourage new compositions. I got involved with them. In fact, I was their composer in residence during 2003. They've made recordings of a goodly number of my choral pieces. So for this recital, I'm playing a couple in the area of 2 to 3 minutes each.
What's your reaction after having written some music to hear it brought to life by a group of brilliant singers like that?
If it's not what you thought it was going to be, that can be good or bad. If it's exactly like you thought it would be, of course, you're automatically very pleased.
Usually human voices bring out something in a piece beyond what you thought.
Well, I would say that in the listening to these performances, sometimes some are more convincing than at other times. In writing, I don't know every nuance that, in this example, the conductor, the director of the choir, is going to feel themselves. The pieces, they tended to come out differently than I had conceived. They spoke maybe more clearly sometimes than I had imagined in writing them.
Well, since I'm a theater guy, I'm intrigued by something you said. Some performances of your pieces are more convincing than others, which suggests to me that there's an acting component to how your pieces come across when they're sung by a human voice.
Absolutely no question of that. I was just at a rehearsal yesterday of the songs from the Jolamore poetry, and Dawn, the soprano, is doing a very fine job of communication with the audience. What both she and the pianist were doing was just gorgeous. I was so convinced, I thought I was the most brilliant composer in the world, you know. But a great deal of that was what they were doing in order to bring the music to life, going far, far, far beyond the words and the pitches and the rhythms that are written there. facial expressions, body gestures. It's all a part of convincing the audience, of absorbing them into the music in some way or the other. And boy, I was so impressed. I wouldn't have ever noticed if there'd been wrong notes somewhere. You know, it just wouldn't have mattered. All the sense was there.
Sunday at 2 o'clock, day after tomorrow, there's a presentation called With and Without Words. And it's all compositions by Russell C. Burnham, who is my guest today. Well, thank you, Russell, for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you so much.
This is a piece of music by Russell Burnham, based around a poem by Rainer Maria Rilke. You can attend that free concert of Russell Burnham's original works this Sunday at 2 o'clock at the Zing Recital Hall in the Arts and Humanities Building at Chico State. That's on 2nd Street, next to Madison Bear Garden. And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it anytime after 3:30 Friday, online at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.